everything changes. That's the most accurate advice that I received before I became a dad for the first time. See, I expected the sleepless nights. I expected the need for a rigid schedule and the shift in priorities. I even expected the poop. But I didn't. No, I couldn't have prepared myself for the way my entire worldview would change, how my relationship with my wife, my soulmate, would change, how I wouldn't look at friends and family the same way again, how I would grow to resent my dog. What did change the most was finding that protective, roaring lion, RoboCop on steroids version of myself anytime my kids needed my help. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of help that comes from opening a bag of fruit snacks or helping to turn on Paw Patrol. I'm talking about the kind of help like when my daughter came home from preschool with her head down because one of her classmates told her that she wasn't as pretty when she didn't wear a dress. Now, that time was pretty easy. My wife and I got her confidence right back up where it should be. Today's show is going to be talking about those times when our kids need help and we don't necessarily know the right thing to do. I said earlier that nothing could have prepared me for having kids, but truly, nothing in the world could have prepared me of what it was like to have a kid with behavioral health needs. My name's Kyle Lewis. I'm joined by Angie Lee, and this is Peace of Mind, a conversation about mental health, wellness, and the never-ending quest to feel okay. Welcome to another episode of Peace of Mind. My name's Kyle Lewis. I am the Communications Director for the Delaware Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board. I am joined, as always, by Angie Lee. Say hi, Angie.
Hello, everyone. Good morning.
Angie is the Executive Director of Safe Harbor Peer Support Services. And this is Peace of Mind. We're going to be talking about mental health, behavioral health, wellness, stigma, all the issues surrounding. And today, specifically, we are talking about parenting. Angie and I are both relatively new to Delaware County and working in the area. And the very first thing, the very first conversation we had was talking about the issues that our respective children have. I think the best thing for me to do in this situation would be to hand it over to Angie, who's told her daughter's story so many times that it just comes straight from the heart, and it's beautiful to hear about. But Angie, would you mind please telling us a little bit about your family and your life?
Absolutely, I would. First and foremost, to give other parents or guardians or caretakers out there hope, to give them that hope that they are not alone. Our journey with our daughter started 5 years ago when she was 10 years old. And I want to repeat that again, 10 years old. You know, mental health does not affect people at a particular age. There isn't something where there's a specific age of onset. It can happen at any time to anyone throughout the lifespan. But for our daughter, it was 10. She was being bullied both racially and sexually from another sixth grader. And again, I want to put that in perspective that this was sixth grade. And she came to us one day after spring break and just crying and saying, I need to talk to somebody. And like I said in last week's episode, you know, everything kind of went into this. At first, it was kind of the mama bear thing. I wanted to know who was doing this, which she told us. And, you know, and I'll say this, you know, you kind of go through these stages of grief as well as a parent. Because my first inclination when I called the school principal and said I wanted to have a meeting at 6:30 the next morning was I go, I want this kid and his parents. Give me 5 minutes in a locked, soundproof room. That's all I need. And after I got that out.
They didn't go for that, did they?
No, I think I scared the crap out of the principal, to be honest. But, you know, I had to get that off my chest. But then as, you know, I, again, because of my background, knew that we had to get her both in from a counseling standpoint. We had to get the psychiatry side of it. You know, we really had to have those wraparound services. And once we got her into the counseling and psychiatry, it started becoming evident that she was having suicidal thoughts. You know, the other thing, just to backtrack a little bit, you know, we got her into counseling and the psychiatry. When I say a Band-Aid, these were not pediatric.
Sure.
They didn't specialize in, you know, pediatric care. But I knew that we had to get her in somewhere and then had to make the appointments with, we went with Nationwide Children's. at the time. And we waited 4 months for the counseling and 6 months for the psychiatry part. But we had to begin that process.
And I think we should point out, too, that that's not specific to Nationwide Children's.
No, it's not.
It's incredibly difficult to be seen by a clinician most times. It's very hard to get, you know, like same-day service when you need it.
It really is. And, again, it's one of those things that, you know, we live in a resource-rich area in central Ohio, whereas a lot of counties don't have those resources. So you're still looking at that time. Once we got into Children's with both of them, like I said, it took about 6 months. She had her first episode where she was hospitalized. And, you know, it's just this feeling of going into a hospital, basically everything is stripped away. You're seeing your child suffer and you can't kiss it away. You can't put a Band-Aid on it.
Popsicle doesn't get rid of it.
Nothing gets rid of it.
Not even a hug.
You know, this child is 10 years old, and as much as you tell them, I love you, or, you know, how can I help, it doesn't make things better necessarily. They know it, but it's not registering.
Sure.
And so, you know.
Do you mind me asking what that is like for you and your husband working through that, to have that feeling? Because that's, you know, that sort of feeling leaves a bit of a crater. And
it really does. And it was really hard because as parents, you know, right, you know, one of the things that I had to learn very early on, especially after her first hospitalization, was we also had to take care of ourselves.
Sure.
Because when she came home after the first time and we had the safety plan, I was not sleeping.
Absolutely.
I was up every 30 minutes checking on her to make sure, to be quite honest, to make sure that she was alive,
right.
That she hadn't taken her own life. And so you, even as parents, you have to step back and say, okay, I can't help my child if I don't take care of myself.
Right.
Now, I will say during this time, one of the things that I remember sitting with a counselor and she said to me, what is your worst fear? And for the first time out loud, I said to wake up the next morning and find my child had taken her life. And it was one of those moments where I broke down crying in the office, but at the same time, to say it out loud for the first time and to actually hear those words, it was very empowering as well, because all I kept thinking was, we are not going to let these demons beat her.
Right.
We're not going to let them do this. But it was, you know, throughout the whole process, you have to learn how to advocate for your child. She was young. And again, even with the stigma that she was 10, I mean, that even in the mental health world, sometimes, well, 10 is kind of young and
right.
maybe they're not mature enough.
Right.
And, you know, to get the certain type of treatment. And you have to be able to say, no, you're not turning my child away. You are going to treat my child. And so that was another, you know, thing that I had to learn, not so much learn because I know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I've advocated for people my whole life. But when it's your own child, there's this whole other layer of emotion that comes in. And sometimes you have thought bubbles that pop that probably shouldn't pop at certain times. But yeah, and then just, again, managing your own emotion. I would go into my bedroom and turn on Lifetime because there's always sappy movies on there. And just bawl my eyes out.
Sure.
Just curl up in a ball and just cry. So when I came out, you know, she said, Mom, how come you're crying? Because what she would say is, you're better off without me because you cry.
Oh.
You know, I don't want to hurt you anymore. And so I would say, oh, no, I was watching this movie. And so, you know, you had to wait till we got into that environment with the counselors that we could talk about that type of stuff.
Right.
She was hospitalized again 2 times, you know, so that was, again, a longer time. And then understanding all the medication,
right.
you know, it's going to be a cocktail. You have to kind of figure out what works with each particular child. And, you know, it has been a journey. She is doing, I always say she's doing very well. We've done not a 360, because that means you got back to where you started.
Right.
So we've done a 180. But there is still not a day that I don't ask her, you know, what her mood rating is, what her
right.
SUDS rating is.
Right.
you know, do you have a plan to kill yourself? And that was another thing, not being afraid to ask those questions. And when your child has a safety plan, as a parent, as a caregiver, as a guardian, there's homework for you too. You have to follow that safety plan. It's not just the school. It's not just the counselor. You have to follow it and hold yourself accountable as well. And, you know, I really think that part of why we've gotten her to where she is because we held ourselves just as accountable as we held her as well as follow through.
So do you mind me asking then, what good has come from your daughter's journey and your family's journey? What have you guys been able to see as a positive from all of this happening?
You know, honestly, I think going through all this, there's definitely been a resiliency that she has developed by advocating.
Just her, do you think, though?
All of us. But it's something I can share. Like I said, absolutely. I mean, I've got different experience, and I would always, I mean, I remember sitting at a restaurant with a good friend of mine, and I started crying, not just for our situation, but for all the people out there that don't know how to do this, that don't know how to navigate, that may be afraid to speak up on behalf, you know, not that they don't love their children or whomever, they don't know how to, they don't know what to say.
And I think what also comes into play there is that parent, you know, the feeling, the need to protect your child and not let anyone else hurt them. And I've noticed in my situation, which I'll get into in a little bit here, but I kind of have to find what's the good middle ground between advocating and putting my 8, soon to be 9-year-old out there too much. So that's something that we also have to navigate.
Yeah, and we had to navigate that as well. And one of the things, you know, that I will say that we've also learned, and again, why this, even this show has been so important to me and why this has been such a passion of mine, is even the support groups that you had to go through, because after she went through her second hospitalization, then she had to go through intensive outpatient therapy, and then we had to go through social anxiety. I mean, we were living at Children's 5 days, I mean, at least 5 appointments a week. All the groups that they have for parents is more about understanding your child's mental health, because she was diagnosed with anxiety and major depressive disorder. But there really wasn't anything out there for parents.
Right.
And to be able to talk to another parent.
Right.
And so that's why something else that's been, I've been very passionate about, that as parents, we have to talk to each other about it.
Sure.
And talk to our kids. I will say, my daughter's friends, 6th grade, were also the ones who told her to come talk to us.
That's pretty great.
It's great. And then, you know, and I have to give credit with getting the messaging out in the schools, mm-hmm. how important that is, because they were the ones, you need to talk to your parents, you need to talk to your parents, you need to tell your parents what's going on. And so these are 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, and so as somebody who is a more seasoned Gen X person,
we're going to work that phrase into every episode.
I know, we are. If kids can do it at 10 years old,
right?
Why can't we, as grown adults, have the conversations and not be judgmental?
Absolutely. And parents judging parents, I mean, we could have an entire show where we just go through Facebook groups and talk about the things that are said and done in these, you know, quote unquote, supportive parenting groups.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing that too that has bothered me as we've gone through this journey is, you know, when a child has a mental health, you know, is under the age of 18, everyone looks to blame the parents.
Yes.
As soon as someone turns 18, it's this, again, magic switch that someone's an adult. So now we blame that individual for not taking care of themselves and so forth. And we have to get away from that. We have to get away from this age stuff and someone's too young or someone's too old. That all has to go away.
Yeah, I came across in a story one time this turn of phrase that I just loved. And I don't remember the author, but unfortunately, but assuming a parent is responsible for their kid's behavior is like assuming that somebody's dental practices are the result of their dentist. You know, I'm a grown man. I visit the dentist twice a year, And every single time we have the same conversation, Kyle, if you don't start flossing, you're going to have some issues. And here I am, 38 years old, soon to be 39. I don't floss. I'm sorry. I don't. I'm telling the audience here because, you know, we're all family, but that's not my dentist's fault. I know the risks. I've been over it many, many times with him, but you know, here I am.
Well, and the other thing too is we need to do, as parents, we need to do those check-ins.
Yes.
Because I can tell you, with our daughter, we did check-ins, but, you know, there's this, you know, wheel of symptoms to talk to kids. And that's great from a foundational standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter was a straight-A student. She had friends. She played sports. She did things on the weekends. She socialized.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have any behavioral issues at school. So, you know, I
from a middle class community too.
Yes, yes. And so, I step back and I think she didn't really fit into this quote unquote mold. So I think
right.
we also have to get away as parents away from, well, if my child doesn't have any of these, then they're okay.
Right.
I think as parents, as guardians, as caregivers, you still need to have those conversations with the kids and do those check-ins. And I'm going to say it again. If you ask somebody if they want to hurt themselves, if they want to take their own life, you are not planting that into their head.
No. And, you know, that concept is something that's stressed from a very, very, very worthwhile training that is widely available in Delaware Morrill County. It's called QPR,
yes.
Which is hosted by Helpline, one of the fantastic behavioral health entities here. And it teaches you how to... Just from a very basic standpoint, a very, you know, lay knowledgeable standpoint, how to interrupt that thought cycle of somebody hurting themselves. And Angie, thank you so much for being willing to divulge, you know, all of that and share your family story, because I promise somebody will have heard this. You know, if not here, then, you know, one of the many other places where you're willing to address it. Stories like that made my family's story much easier to navigate, where, you know, I have two wonderful children, and my oldest, my 8-year-old daughter, her first pediatrician described her as slow to warm up. She said she's going to be the little girl who's going to be hugging onto your legs when you walk into a crowded room. She's not going to want to engage people. She's going to be the last one to jump into the pool. And it went from that to eventually a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder, which essentially means that it doesn't matter what the situation is. It doesn't matter, you know, what the target is. There's going to be a certain level of stress with just about every situation. And to see my, well, then 5-year-old going through this, you know, it's pretty heartbreaking. And one of the things that, you know, Angie briefly touched on, but something that my wife and I talk about frequently, is the amount of anxiety and depression in my family, coupled with the amount of anxiety and depression in my wife's family. Which, you know, looking at it that way, it's sort of like, you know, of course this made its way down to my kids as well. And I'm so glad that we are more prepared for it. And some of the steps that we took to make sure that she has an easier time, because really what this boiled down to was the things that you assume should be easy turn into things that are hard. So... You know, going shopping, having a birthday party. My daughter was 5 years old when she finally let people sing happy birthday to her. I remember a lot of her parties, we would bring out the cake, they would start singing happy birthday, and she would immediately dive under the table. And, you know, it was cute, you know, to see and everything until you realize, you know, what exactly is going through your daughter's head. But, you know, so all these things started adding up that should have been easy that were so much harder, you know, potty training, first day of school. And, you know, she had some issues at her preschool that made this harder than it should have been. And we were able to get her help. We waited about 6 months until we could see a counselor. And once we started, though, We haven't stopped. She continues to see counselors. You know, the Delaware Morrow Mental Health Recovery Services Board funds a program that puts behavioral health counselors in every school in the two-county area. And it's fantastic because the kids can just go in and talk to that person the same way they would go in and talk to the school secretary. And you start seeing kids pretty frequently, and, you know, it helps a lot of problems, and it helps a lot of parents as well. And the other thing we did was we got her on medication. We got her on the right medication, and we were worried about, number one, the stigma of having a medicated child, and number two, what is this going to do to her personality? And what it did was it brought her personality back out. She was once again the 2 and 3 year old little ray of sunshine that we always loved, because it took enough of the edge off that she wasn't worried anymore. So we try to share our daughter's journey as often as possible, because, you know, we've noticed, you know, my wife and I kind of have a look we give to each other now when we see another little child exhibiting some of the same behaviors that, you know, we call like the tells. And, you know, sometimes we have a conversation with the parents. Hey, have you ever thought of, you know, maybe she's dealing with some anxiety here, and, you know, maybe she's not being stubborn. Maybe she's being anxious. And I hope it has helped some people. It's probably annoyed some, but we are going to keep having the conversation whether people like it or not.
Yeah. And to jump in, quite honestly, please, because we have talked about it and talked about it, I have had so many friends call me saying, hey, can you help? Can you point us in the right direction? You know, who should we call? This is what's going on. So trust me, it makes a difference. Again, going back to what we've been talking about, having the conversation.
Yes.
And it can do a world of good.
And one of the good things that can have that can come from that conversation is when it puts you in touch with the right kind of professionals who can really help. And we are so fortunate to have one of those professionals in the room with us, sitting here so politely listening to Angie and I just gab on. Big welcome to Rachel Lane. Rachel is the coordinator of the Delaware County Family Children First Council. So thank you for being here first. And I think the first thing we're going to need you to do is explain what is the Family Child First Council.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here. Would love to talk about Family and Children First Council, because it's kind of like, if you know, you know, but a lot of people do not know about us. So we are a council made up of different local agencies. So, for example, the Mental Health Board, Juvenile Court, Job and Family Services, Children's Services, the General Health District, and the Board of Developmental Disabilities. And why that's so great is oftentimes when you are dealing with one issue, there are other things going on. So you may have some mental health things that your child is dealing with, but they may also have a developmental delay. So you're working with the Board of Developmental Disabilities as well. And when you get all these people trying to solve problems going on with your child, it can get really confusing and overwhelming, sure, because they all kind of have their own thing. So we bring everyone together and try to create cohesive plans that will help the family as a whole, not just the child, but, you know, if the parents are really needing something, which, you know, they need the support as well. So we try to put in those services as well.
So before we get too deep into the interview here, how do people put themselves in a position to be helped by the council?
So there's lots of ways. Typically, we get referrals from our local agencies, like I just listed. But a family can also just reach out themselves if they want. They can go on the website. They can give me a call. You can definitely self-refer. And if you're already working with a counselor or nationwide or whatever it is, you can ask them, like, hey, I think it'd be a good idea to start working with Family and Children First. And they should know how to connect the family. And if not, a simple Google Delaware County Family and Children First, we should pop up right away.
Fantastic. And so what kind of resources are out there for people? You know, I mean, you rattled off a lot of great agencies that you work with here.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear about situations that, you know, Angie and I went through, where we were both fortunate to be plugged into, you know, some circles where we were able to get help. What are some of the ways you guys are able to help people?
Yeah.
Who are in our situation?
Yeah. And I really liked hearing both of your stories and kind of how, because you're both professionals working in this field. So it is easier. I mean, a lot of people just have no clue, where do I even start? And if you are concerned that your child is going through something, definitely ask your friends or call, you know, if you want to start with Nationwide or Centero. There's so many resources in Delaware County and Morrow County as well. Even reaching out to the mental health board, whoever it is you're working with, and it may only be the school, they would have resources to point you in the right direction. You know, some of the things that we have are, we have parenting support groups. We have a parent peer support person. So if you're just like, I feel so alone in all of this and I need someone to vent and talk to, that's someone that we can connect you with. If your child needs a mentor because there's just not a lot of adults in your family that can be that mentor, we can connect you with that. It really looks a lot of different ways for families, because you all need something different. And that's what we work to figure out. Like, what are your needs and how do we meet those needs? And it may be trial and error. So,
one thing that, you know, Angie kind of touched on this, and we definitely came through it, of, you know, trying to give the kid a chance to grow out of it. Would you suggest, I mean, do we need that early intervention in these issues, or is it time, or is it proper to give a developing brain, you know, time to figure it out on its own?
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone will have a different opinion on this. I think earlier is always better. If you're noticing things that just don't seem right or are concerning, I think you should always reach out for help, because the earlier that you get involved with mental health services or whatever it is that you're needing, it will be less invasive, and you can typically, you might be able to address it right then and there, and it's not going to develop further into a crisis situation. And I will say, a lot of my clients come to me and they're already in crisis. And sure, it is so, so difficult when you're already in that moment to crawl back out. It just takes so much intervention and time. And if we can get there earlier on, it really makes a huge difference.
So spend a penny to save a pound.
Yes, yes.
is kind of one of the good ways to look at that. And, you know, you have talked about some of the ways that you're helping children. What do you do to kind of help yourself here? Because, you know, as Angie pointed out, you know, she didn't sleep forever, and what kind of toll it took. And, you know, you had to get some strategic crying in at times. And I think we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how important is it, number one, for you to practice, you know, self-care, and how do you do it? Just curious.
Oh, it's so important. And this is something that, like, my workplace is very big about. We have twice weekly mindfulness sessions that we can do. I also do, I'm a big fan of yoga. So that's like my way of kind of decompressing, and it shuts my mind off a little bit. But also I just like car rides. Like, that's something that for me, like, I can just kind of relax in the car and listen to music. But I also have those go-to people that I can talk to about, you know, if I've had a hard day with clients.
Sure.
I definitely reach out.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. If you could, what are the best ways to get in touch with Family Children First Council if someone feels like they need it?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. So you can go to my website. It is kind of lengthy, but it's fcfc.co.delaware.oh.us. Easier to just Google Delaware County Family and Children First Council. We should pop up. We're also on the Job and Family Services website. So lots of ways to find me. My phone number is also 740-833-2385. So please, you know, reach out if you have questions for me. I'd be happy to help you out.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel Lane, for joining us today. And Angie, I believe you had some more information that you think will be helpful to parents who listen to the show today.
Yeah, absolutely. As we close out this segment, I just want to say, as a parent of a child with behavioral health issues, and for all those parents out there and caregivers, I get it. Trust me, I get it. And I just want you to know that the doors at Safe Harbor, both in Delaware and Morrow County, are open for you. We're here to listen, that we are here to help you and support you.
Safe Harbor Peer Support Services, one of the fantastic providers in the Delaware Morrow Mental Health Recovery Services Board Continuum of Care. If you want to know about more services and more providers, you can visit us at dmmhrsb.org or at 740-368-1740. This is Kyle Lewis. I'm joined again by Angie Lee. Thank you guys so much for being with us on Peace of Mind, and we will see you next week.